Hank from New Jersey, it's the SNL Nerds, the show where two comics from New Jersey nerd out about Saturday Night Live. I'm your co-host, Darren Patterson.
And I'm your co-host, John Trumbull.
John Trumbull! How you doing, fella?
How you doing? Good to be back. Good to be back. We inadvertently missed a week of the podcast. We didn't have a new episode last week. We recorded a new episode, or we attempted to record a new episode, but it never ended up happening because our producer said the recording quality was, what did he call it? Bad.
Yeah, I think it's a technical term. I mean, we could get into the whole story about it. It was quite the odyssey that happened to us, folks.
It was quite the comedy of errors. So, I mean, Darren, why don't you start the story? Because it kind of starts with you.
Yeah, this is all my fault. So basically,
I'm not going to say it's your fault. I'm saying it starts with you.
We can say it. It's not all my fault, but a good chunk of it lands on my big meaty shoulders. All right. So
Darren had to repair his laptop last week.
Yeah, there was something wrong with like the hinge of it, like the bezel or something. So like I took it to my computer guy, and they were like, oh well, you know, we got to order the part, and it'll take a while. It'll take us at least a week. So a few days before we were going to record this podcast, I knew the laptop I usually use was going to be out of service. So I noticed that I had the laptop I usually do my work on for my job, which it's a smaller laptop, it's a cheaper laptop, and I basically use it to sort of connect to my computer at work. So it's like, I basically use it as a conduit to a better computer, as it were.
I see.
But like, I thought that the laptop I had would be strong enough to record an episode on. I even tried it out on Audacity, and it seemed to be going okay. So I was like, all right, great. I got a laptop to record the episode. Hot dog. So Sunday rolls around. We have a guest on, and I go to use my laptop. I put on Audacity, and we usually record through this program called Zencastr. And as soon as I loaded up Zencastr, I got this warning message saying, hey, this computer might not be strong enough or not have enough storage to record on Zencastr, just letting you know. And I was like, oh, well, that's concerning.
And Darren was like, I don't fucking care about that stuff. I'm going to record my podcast.
I'm Darren fucking Patterson. You do what I say, computer.
Right.
Get out of my way. Go.
Right. So like, when we were recording, like, Darren is dropping out constantly. There are points where I cannot hear Darren at all. And I'm like hosting the recording of this, and Darren and our guest, John Schneider from the SNL Stats podcast, who we will have back on the show as soon as possible. Apologies to John. There were times when both you and John were speaking at the same time, but because neither one of you could hear each other, you had no idea the other one was speaking.
Yeah, that was frustrating. So, so I was going in and out, like everything was freezing up on my laptop. It just couldn't handle like Audacity being up and Zencastr. It was just like too much. So I just got frustrated and said, hey guys, all right, look, my laptop is just not up to par here. So what say I go to the studio that we usually record in, and we'll record from there. Just give me about 15, 20 minutes and I'll be there.
Yeah. So we pause our recording for like a half hour. So Darren has time to drive to the studio. I make myself a little lunch. And John comes back on later, and then we attempt to record again, and it goes no better.
It went a little better. We got like a half hour out. Okay.
Yeah, we had like so many different chunks of attempts to record this episode, and it would have been just so much work for our super producer Frank Ablawi to weave together. And like, after we sent all the elements, and it was literally like a half dozen different chunks of attempts to record this episode. And Frank gets back to us and he's like, yeah, Darren's recording is really bad. I can't hear him at all.
Yeah. It's like basically us giving somebody a broken vase, like, and just giving him all the pieces and being like, hey, can you put this back together?
Yeah. Yeah. So it would have been like a lot of me talking to John Schneider, from the SNL Stats podcast, and then like long stretches of silence where it was Darren. So it's like, and we couldn't really edit Darren out of the episode. That would have been weird. And we didn't have time to attempt to record it again. So yeah, it just, we just had to chalk it up to one of those things, and it's now the Great Lost episode.
Yeah.
Of the Abnormal Nerds podcast.
Yeah. So, yeah. And after that, I don't know, just going through that, it was like my own, I mean, I don't want to compare it to Vietnam, but I'll compare it to Vietnam. It was like my
own. Yeah. No, it's totally analogous to Vietnam. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the same thing, you know, fighting in a needless war, recording mm-hmm. a podcast, same mm-hmm. thing.
Absolutely. It carries the exact same emotional scars.
Exactly. When is Oliver Stone going to make our movie?
That's what I don't say. Know. I don't know. We just, you know, when is he going to celebrate the real heroes?
That's right. Record on the 4th of July. Record on the 4th of July. That's the name of it.
There we go. And, you know, and it's a shame too, because, you know, one, we had a guest and he had a lot of interesting things to say, and we will have John back again sometime in the near future. And, you know, I don't like that there's now an episode of SNL from the last few years that we haven't officially talked about. I mean, we did talk about it. We know what we said, more or less, but we weren't able to get the podcast together in a state. That happened to us once before. We had a bad recording, but we did have time to re-record that episode.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but I was super bummed about it. I kind of felt like I let our listeners down. It kind of ruined my week. I was really seriously bummed out about it. And
yeah,
I don't know. So, you know, to all our listeners, I really apologize for, you know, us not being able to put out an episode. And it's just, I dropped the ball. It's a big old fumble on my part.
I mean, it's, these things happen, but, you know, it's okay. I mean, like briefly, I remember thinking that the John Krasinski episode was okay. It had some sketches I really liked. It had some sketches I wasn't too nuts about. But, you know, in that regard, it was kind of a typical episode of SNL, I think.
Yeah, for me too. Overall, I thought it was okay. I thought Krasinski was a good host. Mm-hmm. I think, if I recall, we both liked the Ratatouille sketch, the 10-1, just because it was so oddball and weird that it kind of worked. It was like, and I don't know, like at the end where like it shows like Pete, the camera pans to Pete being like a sex critic. It was kind of reminding me of like a Monty Python sketch almost a little bit. So
yeah, I enjoyed that one. I remember liking the loser, the pre-tape where John Krasinski's like defending his little brother from bullies and he's revealing all these embarrassing secrets about him. I thought that was pretty funny.
I remember we both liked the game night sketch where everybody gets arrested for being in the insurrection.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was a good sketch. So I think there was some solid material in that John Krasinski sketch. I added a couple of those sketches to my little YouTube, private YouTube playlist of, you know, favorite sketches of the year. So when we're doing like a best of at the end of the season, I can be like, hey, and I liked this one.
Right. Oh, and of course, Bone Yang is Fran Lebowitz. Who knew we needed that in our lives?
Yeah, I did not know that I needed that in my life, but I am here for it. And I also really, I remember this was much to your surprise. I really liked Machine Gun Kelly's musical segments.
Yeah. I didn't picture you as like, when I heard he was going to be a guest, I really thought, I don't know if like Trumbull's going to like this dude. Mm-hmm. And you said, oh yeah, I really liked him. I was like, wow. I thought I knew your musical taste, sir. Apparently I do not. You're a mystery.
I mean, I wasn't real familiar with Machine Gun Kelly before this. I knew his name, and that was probably about it. I'd heard of him. So I was coming to him pretty fresh, and I remember liking his stuff. It slapped, as the kids say.
Ooh, look at you knowing it, the vernacular. You've been hanging out at the mall there, fella?
I have not, because COVID.
Fair enough. I just imagine you like, you know, hang with like a skateboard under your shoulder, a plaid shirt, backwards baseball cap, hanging out with the rag.
How do you do, fellow kids?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. What up? What up, y'all? Wanna skate by Hot Topic and I don't know, slap a doobie?
Is Hot Topic still a thing?
I think so. Yeah. Okay. Last time I checked, it was.
Like, I couldn't remember if they'd closed down or not.
No, I mean, from what I remember, like from our days, Hot Topic used to be the place where all the goths go. But now mm-hmm. they kind of open it up to like skateboarder stuff and like cartoon t-shirts and whatnot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or maybe, I might be thinking about Spencer Gifts. I could be mixing up the two.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they were both big mall stores. So, absolutely. All right. So, so that was our capsule review of the John Krasinski Machine Gun Kelly episode. And so I guess we should barrel ahead to the theme for this week's episode of the SNL Nerds, the Dan Levy, Phoebe Bridgers episode. This was season 46, episode 11. It aired February 6, 2021. And this was actually, our friend John Schneider from the SNL Stats pointed out, it's the 900th episode of SNL.
Woo! 900! That's a big meatball. Mama,
that's pretty amazing.
It really is. Like, I wonder what they're going to do for the 1,000th episode. It's coming up.
I don't know. I mean, will they do anything special for it? I can't recall them ever having, you know, being like, hey, this is this round number of an episode, we should make something special. I mean, because they're always, I'm sure they're always trying to make the show as good as possible.
Yeah, I think they might. I got to look and wonder if they did something for the 100th episode back in the day. Something tells me they might have.
Oh, okay. Well, that might be some interesting research. We will research that and we will get back to you, SNL nerds.
Absolutely. And also a little trivia fact here is Dan Levy, creator and star of Schitt's Creek, of course, son of Eugene Levy, and mm-hmm. Eugene Levy. I never know how to pronounce his last name, Levy or Levy.
I believe it's Levy.
Levy. Okay. All right. Yeah. So no, because it's Eugene Levy, not Eugene.
Oh, Levy. It's Levy. Okay.
Right. Okay. So
they probably pronounce their last names the same way. I'm guessing.
I'm assuming. Like, I can't imagine be like, oh, don't call me Levy. That's my father's name.
Yeah, it's Levy. So Dan right. Levy.
Got yeah. it. All right. Okay. So, little trivia tidbit. His father, Eugene Levy, or Levy.
We should really learn how to pronounce people's names before we talk about them on a podcast.
I don't think we should. I think it's funnier this way.
Okay. Then fine.
Eugene Levy or Levy. He was scheduled to host SNL back in 1985 with John Candy and musical guest Hall & Oates. Didn't happen because of the writer's strike.
Oh, interesting.
So, yeah, like Eugene came very close to hosting. I mean, that show sounds amazing to me because if anybody knows anything about me is my love of Eugene Levy, John Candy, and Hall & Oates. That episode would have been tight.
That's so I guess they never got to host an episode. Dan Levy post on Twitter or something, like a clip of them making a cameo on SNL though?
Yes, they were making a cameo promoting the show that never happened. So like they were on
before. Oh, so it was like a teaser for the next week. Okay.
Right. It never happened because of the writer's strike. So
he's accomplished something that his father never did.
Ooh, it's going to be a tense Thanksgiving dinner this year.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, and you're a Schitt's Creek fan, right, Darren?
I am, yeah. That's something I got into during the quarantine, during the lockdown. I really enjoy it. I'll admit the first few seasons are a little slow, but I can see why they're slow, because like they're trying to like sort of build their characters up and really uh-huh. be really invested in who they are. But then like once the characters are established, like the rhythm and the pacing does pick up. So like around like the end of season two, beginning of season three, it does pick up a little bit more and become really super funny and really interesting, and like it has a lot of heart. I think that's the thing that kind of separates it from most other sitcoms, is like there is some snark and like, you know, some sarcasm here and there, but there's also like a lot of like tender, sweet, heartfelt moments throughout it. And, you know, in this crazy world we live in today, that we need that now more than ever.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, I have not watched the show. I know I have no doubt that it's good. It won like all the Emmys this last year. And it just came to an end, and I've heard nothing but great things about it. I just have not gotten around to giving it a shot yet.
Okay, well, give it a shot when you can. It's I think you'll dig it. Yeah, I'll say that.
What is it on? I can't keep track of what service everything is on.
It was on the Pop Network, and I think that's like a Canadian network, but then it went to Netflix. And once it got to Netflix, that's when everybody started to really watch it. So you can watch it on Netflix. It's also in syndication on some channels. And I think it's like on IMDb TV, which is
okay. All right. Well, I will check it out on Netflix. That I have. I think this is the very first time I've heard of the Pop Network. So
yeah, like it's literally like the only. I think they had that show, and then they had the One Day at a Time reboot.
And like, oh yes, yes,
right. Those are the only two shows I know that's on that Pop Network. I don't even know where to find it.
Yeah. No, I have no idea. But anyway, okay. Well, let's get into the show proper.
Let's do it.
So we start out, we got a cold open. It's a Super Bowl 55 pregame show with Kenan Thompson as James Brown. No, not that one. And we've got some other cast members as various other football commentators like Boomer Esiason.
Right. Beck is Boomer Esiason. I wrote all these down. I don't know anything about football, so I had to write all these names down.
Yeah.
Alex Moffat is Bill Cowher. Then Chris Redd was Nate Burleson, and Mikey as Phil Sims, who, as I understand it, they're all actual people.
Okay, that's good to know. Yeah, the little disclaimer up front, neither Darren nor I are football fans. That's great if you are. We love you. We support you. Exactly. You enjoy your football.
We're not here to yuck anyone's yum.
Exactly. Exactly. So we got like five commentators. They say early on, like, do we need this many hosts? And they run a few Super Bowl commercials that are just kind of alluding to politics. We got a Cheez-Its commercial that's kind of tying in with Black History Month, I guess.
Yes. Yes. They talk about, you know, Black History Month and the marches and, you know, in these divisive times, in this, you know, Black History Month, it's the best time to eat some Cheez-Its because it's historically delicious.
Yeah, and I mean, it's preceded with like footage of like Martin Luther King and like Obama on a civil rights march and all this stuff. So you're thinking they're going to say something really important. No, it's just an ad for Cheez-Its.
Yeah, I mean, basically the premise of this sketch is because, you know, it's football and we live in the world we live in now. They want it to be as inclusive as possible. So they want to show both sides of the story. So, you know, they talk about how they're going to have the show on things like the Bravo network, but Bravo is going to call it Old Hag versus Young Slut as in reference to Patrick Mahomes and
Tom Brady.
Tom Brady, yeah. Being the old hag.
Yeah, because like he's in his 40s and he's I forget what number Super Bowl it is for him, but I believe it's some sort of record.
I think it's like either 9th or 10th.
Something, yeah, 10 sounds right. Let's see. We also had a Papa John's commercial that was made to appeal to conservatives. They're bragging about how they have no additives, no preservatives, and there's also no child sex trafficking rings in the basement, just referring to that old conspiracy theory that there was a pizza parlor where Hillary Clinton and other Democrats had a secret child sex trafficking ring in a pizza parlor that had no basement. So that's quite an impressive feat.
So where did the basement go, John? Just did you ever ask yourself that?
I did not.
There you go, man. See? It just blew your mind wide open.
Yep, you've opened my eyes.
And of course they say, sorry, libs, no child sex trafficking in this pizzeria. If you want that, you got to go to Hillary's Pizza.
Yeah.
Come in with your special coupon.
And we had a Budweiser ad. There were like two Budweiser ads that were just doing both sides of the COVID vaccine. Like one was pro, one was con.
Right.
And we had A.D. Bryant as both teams' coaches.
This one I didn't, that part of the sketch I really didn't get because, yeah, like it had A.D. dressed as Andy Reid, who's like the coach of one of the teams. And then they go switch to the coach of the other team, Bruce Arians, and it's AD, but with glasses and a different hat.
Right.
And it took me a while to like say, oh, do these two coaches look alike? And I Googled it and looked it up. And yeah, the two coaches do look a lot alike. So I think that, like, if you didn't know that the two coaches look quite a lot alike, like both older, overweight, bald white dudes, except one has glasses and one doesn't, then that joke might go over your head a little bit.
Okay. Yeah. It kind of did. I think that it was just the gag was, for me, was like 80s playing both characters and she has to do quick changes while they cut away to the other people talking. And then, of course, they ask a follow-up question to the first coach. So 80 has to quickly change again. For the cold open, I thought it was kind of weird and meandering. And it was impersonating a lot of people that I don't know of. So it didn't really work for me. I was not the target audience for this.
Okay. No, fair enough. I mean, I'll give it points again for it not being a political cold open, which we got inundated with, you know, for the past few years because we had a maniac in charge. For the most part, this one kind of was like a bunch of different ideas kind of thrown into one sketch, because like at first it goes into the inclusivity parts about where the show will be aired, like on Bravo and the Nickelodeon thing, and then it goes into the commercials. Yeah. Then it goes into the commercials, then it goes to 80, so kind of, and then it ends with like, you know, their predictions for the big game. And I think, what is it, like Chris Redd says something like, oh, I predict like there'll be an ad for Pepsi where Cardi B says her wet ass Pepsi.
Yes. Yeah, it was going in a lot of different directions. So yeah. it didn't quite work for me in that regard.
Yeah, it's like a bunch of different ideas just kind of, you know, stitched together to be like one big cold open. I mean, I thought it was all right, but yeah, I think the fact that there was no real kind of steady through line throughout the whole thing, it was kind of like, all right, I see what you're doing here. But yeah, it didn't really, I don't know if it really gelled for me as well. But
yeah.
But it's not political, so it's already better than last season.
We got a lot of political fatigue from Darren, it sounds like. Okay, so next we had the monologue. We had Dan Levy coming out in a very sparkly suit.
So sparkly.
He's looking sharp. He talks about how his life has changed in many ways in the last 2 months because Schitt's Creek won 9 Emmys and the show came to an end. And when they won the Emmys, they were literally thrown at them by someone in a hazmat suit. So
that's right. I remember that.
It was cute.
Yeah. But then after that, it kind of switches to him wanting to like kind of show behind the scenes about how everybody's safe and, you know, in these times of COVID.
Showing off the safety protocols at SNL.
That, John, I set him up, you knock him down.
Yeah.
And so, of course, and then he approaches some of the people in the audience, and then we have one of the workers there, played by 80, named Doreen, to make sure that they stay 6 feet apart. And she has one of those big, I guess, like floaties. Like those 6-inch, like floaty big noodle type of thing.
Right. Six feet. I think you said 6 inches.
Absolutely. Oh, I meant 6 feet. Sorry, my fault. All right. So then he goes backstage to show everybody, the safety protocols. And we have, of course, A.D. Bryant's character popping in again saying, hey, don't point. People, droplets can spread through pointing. Then they go show, Melissa.
We had a class decontamination station at the page desk, and we see Melissa Villasenor getting like hosed down or disinfected.
Right. Yeah. I mean, at this point, I noticed it was like a little bit of a lull in the monologue. It was kind of.
The audience just did not seem to be reacting to this stuff at all. It was planned to just like dead silence, no laughs.
Yeah,
I don't know if that was like they had a problem with their feed or they just were not digging it. I don't know, but it didn't seem to be going over great.
Right. Yeah, I did. A few things I did like is at one point he sees Keenan in the hallway. And of course, they're socially distant. He says, hey, Keenan, how's it going? It's me, Dan. And he's like, who? Oh, hey, man. Thanks so much. And of course,
they're so far apart that Keenan literally does not recognize the host.
Right. And of course, if you look in the background, you see two showgirls in like a bubble costumes and the llama, but it was like a fake llama.
Bravo. Did they have a Lincoln?
I did not see a Lincoln. There was no Lincoln,
But that is like probably my favorite SNL in joke, and God bless you, Seth Meyers, for reviving that.
Yes, you're doing the Lord's work, Seth.
Every time they go backstage, you see a couple showgirls, a llama, and a guy in a Lincoln costume, or some combination of those three things, and it's so much fun because they never come back in the show at all.
Right, the traditions never die.
You know, so you just every week, I'm just assuming they're cutting some sketch with showgirls, a llama, and Lincoln.
Right. So then as Dan walks through the hallway, he's about to point to a picture, an old picture of Catherine O'Hara from the 90s, back when she hosted. And then, of course, with the 80 kind of, you know, slapping his hand, saying no pointing because that's how droplets are spread. And like, didn't get a play to any laughs. But the biggest laugh of this monologue is when he turns a corner. He sees a man in a plastic cube. That man, his dad, Eugene Levy, or Levy.
Yep. Yeah. Eugene Levy is saying, like, hey, I flew in from L.A. and now I'm in a plexiglass isolation box because, you know, he had to be quarantined after the flight. Huge applause break for the great Eugene Levy.
Oh, hey, son. Hey. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's good to see Eugene on SNL. It's like, oh. There he is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess that's pretty much it. Then he just walks back on the stage saying, we've got a great show for you. This monologue, like, I don't know. There were some parts where I thought he had some funny lines in there, but it just wasn't getting, like, a strong reaction. Like, when he walked through the mist, the antiviral mist, he was like, oh, you really taste the bleach. And, like, nothing.
Just didn't work somehow. And I don't really know why that was, but just not really any reaction. And when you're not hearing any laughter from the audience, it's kind of tough to laugh yourself at home, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's like, it was a weird cold open, but I mean, but he had a lot of energy for it. You could tell he really, you know, really wants this show to go off great. He has like a lot of positive energy, good vibes. So I think because he's so charming and so in for you know, the show being one of the best, I think that carried it over.
Yes. Yeah, I would agree with that. So next we had our first sketch, Universal Tram, with, let's see, it was Mikey leading he's leading a tram tour through Universal Studios.
Right.
And Dan is a tour guide in training, and he comes in and he's supposed to pepper in little bits of trivia, but they are very inappropriate for a family studio tour.
Right. So it's basically, like I said, Mikey is the tour guide. We got Ego driving the tour, the tram.
Yeah.
Keenan is one of the visitors on the tram. And Dan plays not Toby, but Thoby or Throby.
Levy? I didn't write it down. I very rarely consider the character names relevant.
Yeah, this one, I don't know why. They chose it to be Thoby or Throby. It doesn't really come into play. It's just like a quick little gag. But like, he's this trainee who's super nervous. He's been there since 6 a.m. and he was crashing. So he drank some coffee and now he's peppy and alert because he doesn't usually drink coffee. So now he's like very jittery. And oversharing and maybe saying things you shouldn't be saying.
When they're going through the town square for Back to the Future, he says, like, oh, interesting fun fact about Back to the Future. Like, you know, why are Doc and Marty friends? Because Doc was actually grooming Marty to molest him.
Yeah.
So, and Ego is the tram driver just saying, like, well, you know, that actually does make a lot of sense.
Yeah, it's dark, but it makes sense.
Yeah, and when they're talking about E.T., he says, like, E.T. looks like a ball sack come to life. Change my mind.
Yeah, and of course, Mikey is a straight man saying, hey, Thoby, whoa, family park, family language, hooray.
Yeah, and then when they're talking about Jurassic Park, he says, you know, what do you call a lesbian dinosaur? A lickalotopus.
That's an old joke. That's like a street joke.
Yeah, I can see that. And then Dan confesses that when they bring up what's the name of the actor, the Newman actor,
Wayne Knight.
When they bring up Wayne Knight as Newman, he confesses that Wayne Knight is my softener, and he explains what a softener is.
Yes, you know, somebody when you need to think of somebody to make the Wang go down.
Yeah, yeah, you know, like instead of thinking about baseball, you think about a specific person, and yeah, that's unfortunate for Wayne Knight, I think.
Yeah, I'm sure Wayne's like, oh, hey, man.
Yeah, nobody wants to be somebody's softener.
Yeah, Wayne's like, hey, I'm sure his wife had been, no, honey, you're not my softener. You're handsome. Yeah, you're a handsome man.
He's a handsome man,
right?
A very charming man, which adds to your attractiveness,
right? And I like that one line. Ego said, she mentioned who her softener is. She said it was Mr. Bean. He's like, yeah, goofy dudes don't get a slick from me.
Yeah, that was something. The phrasing on that, goofy dudes don't get it slick for me. I just, you know, they had to run that line by Standards and Practices.
It's a great line. You can't deny it. It's a great line.
Yeah, yeah, and I liked how she delivered. She just almost threw that away. And then towards the end, we have Bo and Yang come in as Gru from Despicable Me, and it turns out that he's an old friend of Dan's who got into coke and then ditched him for all his cokehead friends. So,
yeah. So, I don't know. What do you think of this sketch?
I thought it was okay overall. You know, the outrageousness of what Dan was saying kind of carried it through.
Yeah, yeah. I like this sketch too. Like you said, it's mostly like Dan's charm and charisma and energy that kind of carried it through. But it did remind me a lot of, do you remember that one sketch, the Medieval Times sketch from the Adam Driver episode? It kind of had that same kind of structure where Mikey plays like the straight man. And, you know, somebody stands next to him and says all these outrageous things. And he has to be like, no, we don't say that here. Chill out, man. And then
I vaguely remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Keenan was in the audience saying, hey, man, let him say what he wants. Like it had that same structure where like Mikey's a straight man. Keenan's the one reacting. And like the host is like saying outrageous, outlandish things.
So probably the same writing team as before.
Probably, if I had to guess. But I mean, overall, like I said, because Dan is able to carry it, and you know, goofy dudes don't get a slip for me. That's a funny line. Like I enjoyed this sketch. I dug it.
Yeah, I thought that was all right.
Yeah.
So next we had a pre-tape, Zillow, which was a commercial for Zillow.com, done in the style of a phone sex ad.
Yeah, this one's getting a lot of buzz on the interwebs. A lot of people are relating to this. So we open up to this sketch where it looks like it's, you know, like one of those old phone sex lines from the 80s, or not the 80s, but like, you know, from recent time. They're like, hey, stud, you looking for a new fantasy? And then they mention that now that you're over, that you're, you know, in your 30s or late 30s, you need a new fantasy. You need to get, you know, to get off in a different way. Mm-hmm. Zillow.com. And so it's like done.
Because the pleasure you once got from sex now comes from looking at other people's houses.
Right. And yeah, I mean, I thought this one was a home run. And it has all these cast members looking at their phones on houses on Zillow saying, oh, ooh, updated colonial with mature landscaping. Oh. And I think that's the funniest part, too. Like, you see, like, Alex and Mikey, like, saying, oh, look at this house. I want to flip it. And just like biting his, yeah. I was just biting his bottom lip, like, just people giving their O faces.
And towards the end, we had Cecily in there as the listing agent, and she's like constantly calling people, and she's kind of, I guess, the Zillow boner killer, because she's got a very grating kind of voice, and she's just like, oh, here, let me tell you what this is going to cost. So.
Right,
that was a neat twist at the end.
Yeah, I did like that, because like in the commercial they say, hey, if it gets too realistic, it's too hot, you just, you know, click on the contact agent button to, you know, take down this sexy fantasy. And of course, it shows Mikey clicking the contact agent, and of course, like you said, Cecily calls back as Donna Lassieri from Remax, saying, like, hey, you're entering the house, do you want to see it? I can't do Sundays. And
yeah. So, you know, just kind of breaking you out of the fantasy, I guess.
Yeah, very much so. And yeah, this sketch I like quite a bit. I like I said before, a lot of my friends online are relating to this in a weird way, because I don't know, like after when you hit a certain age, you do, instead of looking at, I guess, you know, pornography as much as you used to, you look at like house listings, which I guess is like like you said, like the new fantasy. Like back when you were younger, you used to look at all these super attractive people that you wouldn't, that you couldn't, like, you know, normally hook up with under regular circumstances.
Right. And now it's, you look at these amazing houses that you could never afford under regular circumstances.
Yes, that's the new kink. And so. I mean, I thought the sketch was great. I love the angle they took on it. And I don't know, this was a home run for me.
All right. Yeah. I liked it a lot too. I think I'll have to rewatch it, but yeah, I enjoyed it quite a bit. Next we have Super Bowl Pod, which was a group of friends gathering together for their Super Bowl party, talking about how they've all been very safe, and they decide to take a risk and take their masks off. And little details come out over the course of the sketch of these hideously unsafe things they've been doing.
Yeah, so it's basically like, you know, people like Beck saying, hey, you know, I've been safe, I've been quarantining, I've been doing everything right, you know, it's just me and my wife and my brother and my grandparents and, you know.
Their nursing home.
And their nursing home. And I think at one point, Dan Levy said, hey, what do you do for a living? And Beck's like, oh, I'm a mouth masseuse. Like, right. I massage people's mouths. But, you know, I've been safe.
Yeah, Chris Redd says, oh, yeah, I'm still doing my wrestling club. Kyle Mooney is still having random sex with strangers in the park.
Raw dog sex.
What's that?
Raw dog.
Raw dog sex. Oh, yes, that's very important. You know, just because you get more sensation that way.
Yeah.
then they decide to, like, they all disinfect their hands. And the host says, like, hey, I don't want people to share utensils with this chili that I made. So they all scoop out chili from the bowl with their hands.
Yeah, and they're eating actual chili with their hands, shoveling in their mm-hmm. mouth. Like, so much to the point that there's one part where Heidi has a line, but I couldn't make it out what she was saying because she had a mouthful of chili.
Aw, well, I'm sure that was the best line of the sketch.
Probably. But I also...
go ahead.
Well, there was also one line that I really liked where Dan Levy says, you know, I've been safe. I've been on Zoom and everything. And it's like, oh, you do all your meetings on Zoom? And it's like, oh, no. You know, I fly around all the time for meetings and stuff. But, you know, I've been on Netflix and, you know, I've been safe that way. And she's like, he also said that he has a vaccine and he pulled out like a little bottle of vaccine. And
But he hasn't taken it yet.
Right. Heidi says, hey, you have? Are you going to take it? And he says, yeah, I take it with me wherever I go.
Right. Then, of course, everybody starts talking about how they can't taste or smell the chili. And then we have Kate McKinnon coming on as Dr. Fauci and talks about how you're like all of us. You're bored, horny, and borderline nuts, but you still shouldn't do things like this Super Bowl party.
Right. And then to help her spread the word, here comes hit maker Psy. And then mm-hmm. they all dance out to Gangnam Style.
Whoop, 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 whoop. Gangnam Style. How long ago was Gangnam Style? Like 10 years ago, maybe?
Yeah, I think it was like 2012.
Yeah, that's
it. It was okay. That was a random, that was so random, that edition.
And yeah, I remember like the real Psy made a cameo in SNL like during his heyday.
Really?
Yeah, he made, I don't even remember what the sketch was, but he came on at the end of the sketch and he got this big applause break and, you know, did Gangnam Style. And I think that was the first place I saw Psy. I don't think I had watched the Gangnam Style video before that. So I was like, oh, I guess this is a real person and he's very popular right now.
Oh, you thought it was like something they made up for the sketch?
Or? No, I could tell by the audience reaction that he was a real person. And it was also, you know, before SNL had any Asian cast members, so.
All right. So, I don't know. I thought this... What did you think of this guy? Oh, you got this.
I thought this... So it sounds like you liked it.
I did. Yeah, I guess I did. It was... No, I did. It was like... It was kind of weird. The way it ended again with almost like on a freeze frame, quote unquote freeze frame. And then Kate comes in as Fauci saying, hey, you know, I mean, I guess some people can see that as being a little preachy where it's like, hey, you know, we want all you guys to be safe and don't do this and, you know, stay home miserable, like without no friends because we wanted everybody to be safe. And now here's Sai.
Yeah.
I thought that was
kind of a random ending. Yeah.
Yeah. But I guess for the most part, I guess I did like this sketch. Yeah.
Yeah. It worked pretty well for me. Next, we have a sketch that oddly is not on YouTube for some reason, or has not been posted yet. Lifting Our Voices, which was a show on BET, and they're talking about Black History Month. And for Black History Month, they are, of course, spotlighting white people.
Of course.
Specifically white allies, like, you know, white people who try to be supportive of their African-American brothers and sisters.
Yeah, I mean, the message I got from this one is like, yeah, these white people, they're well-meaning, they're trying, but sometimes they're like, they go a little overboard when they don't need to.
And they're a little clueless. We had Punky Johnson and 80. Brian, come on. 80 was Punky's seventh grade teacher who taught Black history, even though she was a math teacher.
Right. But she celebrates Black history.
Yes, yes. And the Punky says, well, she tried, but maybe too much. Then we had a couple of friends. We had Chris Redd and Dan Levy come in, as they've participated in 36 different Black Lives Matter marches. And we find out that Dan is kind of a slacktivist. He's talking about like stuff he's posted on social media in support. And he also like at one point threw a brick through a Wendy's window, which Chris Redd got arrested for.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Dan, like, I think posted a picture of him with, his idol, Tupac.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, yeah, it got shared through Black, you know, Twitter for,
All
sorts of reasons.
Yeah. And then lastly, we had Ego and Kyle as, they were a couple, right?
Yes. They're an interracial couple. The way Kyle played this character kind of cracked me up. Cause like I've said before, like I'm kind of hot and cold on Kyle, but this one cracked me up. I'll say where he's, mm-hmm. cause he's just this guy who just, you know, who loves being married to his strong mahogany queen.
Yeah.
He says, and you know, cause white women don't do it for me. Cause I like to move, daddy. And you could see, if you go back and watch, it actually is on YouTube. If you go back and watch this.
Is it? It's not on the playlist for this episode on the SNL account.
No, I saw it on YouTube like a few minutes ago. It should be there.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, maybe I should hit refresh.
Yeah. But you could see like Ego is like really holding in like some laughter. Like she's about to break.
Uh-huh.
I think it's because of the way Kyle played this character. Just like, hey man, skippity boop bop. I love the jazz. I love cool. You know, I'm a simple man. I love grits and collard greens on the stove, baby. And of course, it's just Ego saying he's got a lot of money.
Yeah, just kind of justifying it. So it sounds like you really enjoyed this one.
Yeah, this one I got a kick out of. Like, I mean, I'll admit, like structurally, it was like them kind of hitting the same beat over and over again about these. You know, these white people who are well-meaning, but like they can maybe go a little overboard, or just need, you know, maybe some of their well-meaningness is kind of misplaced a little bit.
They're doing more harm than good, maybe.
Yeah, but again, I think it's the performances and the way the cast members are carrying it that help put it over the line a little bit for me.
Yeah. This one, I got what they were going for. It didn't really send me. I feel like they could have taken this further somehow. Like the things that the white ally friends were doing could have been more disturbing or more wrong, or gotten their friends into more trouble somehow. I think I would have found that a little more entertaining.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, like I did like it, but I see what you're saying. Like it could have gone a little bit further, or it needed a little bit more. But I think I enjoyed it more for the performances than the actual. I like the premise, but they needed to explore it a little bit more.
Yeah. Okay. So next we had our musical guest of the week, Phoebe Bridgers, who I am led to understand is not the same person as Phoebe Waller-Bridge.
I'm just as shocked as you are.
I have no idea why that is. That seems needlessly confusing.
Yeah.
We should have a limitation on how many Phoebes we are allowed with Bridge in their last name.
You got to change either your first or your last name, or add like an initial in there, or a number, or something.
Yeah, Yeah, or put something different in the middle to distinguish you from Phoebe Waller-Bridge.
Exactly. Just like, you know, like yeah. a...
Like Phoebe Roadway Bridger.
Ooh.
Bridgers. There Bridgers. It's, yeah.
Phoebe Roadway. That rocks. I like it.
Yeah. But, so her first number was Kyoto, and she's dressed as a skeleton, along with all of her band.
Yeah, they all have these, like these suits, like the Cobra Kai kids had in the Karate Kid when they were chasing around.
Like one of our Twitter followers said they were like the David S. Pumpkins backup dancers.
Oh yeah, but without the big feather headdress. Yeah, I could see.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah, without the skull faces. So, I enjoyed her first number. I thought it was a fun bouncy tune. She's got a nice voice.
Yeah, like it definitely had like a '90s vibe to it, which I liked. Mm-hmm. Almost like shoegaze type of 90s rock, but not quite. But yeah, like I didn't know much about her going in, but like I did enjoy it. I was like, oh, this is pretty good. I definitely got like a lot of 90s vibes, so maybe that's why I enjoyed it. It was like a kind of a retro sound, but not quite 90s, but it's definitely evocative of that era.
Yeah, and her second number was called I Know the End. This was one of those songs that, you know, it starts out as like a quieter song, but it kind of builds over the course of it and ends up with her like smashing her guitar on one of the speakers on stage.
Yeah, this is the one that like a lot of people are got a lot of people kind of, you know, raising their eyebrows at, because I remember when I was watching this and I was like, oh yeah, guitar smashing. That used to be a thing. I haven't seen a good guitar smashing in like forever. That's like,
were you really starving for a good guitar smashing?
I didn't know I was till I saw it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like that, just like you said, like it starts off very slow, like a ballady type of thing, and then, you know, it builds and builds and builds till it's just like total madness and anarchy. At one point, she's just like literally like just screaming like ah,
yeah,
and as she's like playing the guitar, and then she's like smashing it on an amp, and then there's sparks flying everywhere. And I was like, oh, shit, rock and roll. Yeah, I remember this. It's been forever since we've seen a good guitar smashing. I'm gonna say it's like since maybe Nirvana.
Yeah, yeah. I think it was on SNL or like some MTV awards show where Nirvana was playing and Chris Novoselic like threw his guitar up in the air and it came down and like smashed him on the chin.
Yes. Oh, was it MTV? I remember that. Yeah. Like, I forget if it was MTV or not, but yeah, that did happen.
Yeah. It was just this epic fail, and it just, he might have, I don't think he knocked himself out, but he definitely injured himself.
Yeah, it was not well thought out.
It was not good. He should have practiced that move a few more times.
I don't know why I don't know why he stood directly underneath it. Like,
maybe take a step back.
Yeah, like, how do you think this is going to go, man?
Take a step back and then reach out for your guitar. That plummeted straight down.
Yeah, like when he did that, when I saw him doing that, I was like, all right, what's the plan? Like,
yeah,
are you gonna catch it before it hits you? Or I don't, dude.
I think it's safe to say that was the plan. Yes, I think he was planning to catch it. But I liked Phoebe Bridger's stuff. It was cool. I'd like to check out more of her stuff.
Yeah, I agree. I think, I know she's been pretty well known in her in the music area. She was like actually nominated for a Grammy not too long ago, I believe, Best New Artist. But like, you know, now she's kind of on like on a few more people's radar because of Saturday Night Live. Yeah. So
and it looks like she's trending on Twitter right now. On my What's Happening, it says musician Phoebe Bridgers gains a wave of new fans after her guitar smashing Saturday Night Live performance. And she's got 35.5K tweets. So,
got that.
Yay for Phoebe Bridgers.
Got that SNL bump.
Yep. So, good stuff. Next, we got the weekend update with Colin Jost and the Michael Shay.
Hey.
So, let's see. I didn't have too many lines that really tickled my fancy in this one. We had Shay saying Marjorie Taylor Greene and talked about how she supports a lot of conspiracy theories. Conspiracy. Oh, God. Whoa. I cannot talk. talked about how she supports a lot of conspiracy theories. And Che says, I get it, lady. You're my type.
Yeah, that was an okay line. I like how Jost called our former president, Trump, a formal social media influencer.
Yes, that was a great burn. That got an applause break from the audience, as I recall. People were very happy about that.
Of course, I also liked how Che addressed the Morgan Whalen or Wallen or Lee.
Yes. SNL musical guest from earlier this season, Morgan Wallen, tape emerged of him saying the N-word.
Yeah.
And Michael Che just says, huh, I wonder who he learned that from. And then they put up a photo of Morgan Wallen standing right next to Colin Jost.
Another Jost is racist joke.
I always love the Michael Che trying to get Jost canceled for being racist.
Right. And there was another Che joke I liked where he talks about a man who got arrested for trying to rob a bank because, according to the man, quote, he wanted to try something new. I like that. Yeah. I like that attitude, said his cellmate.
Yeah. Dark joke. Prison rape joke. We went there.
Hey.
So.
And then we had some weekend update people come out. We had Heidi and Mikey playing. I get these two people who are part of the cancel culture who are online canceling kids.
They have a Twitter account called the Child Cancellation Project, where they're calling out, they're exposing problematic kids and canceling them, and they're all the kids are like under 7 years old, basically the age where kids don't know any better, and they'll say something outrageous or possibly offensive, and they are canceling these kids.
The one I liked is where they want to cancel a baby because when the baby was born, she cried after being delivered by an African-American doctor.
Yeah, I think that was the best joke. I mean, it kind of was talking about how, I mean, whether or not you believe in cancel culture, like how some people will always just pile on to the latest internet persecution of someone who does something wrong or offensive. And that's a thing that happens.
Right. I'm looking up right now. The characters are called Lowell Fitzroy and Janet Noonan. I mean, I like the premise of it because it is basically about how, in this cancel culture we live in, people have kind of made that like their personality and just take it to the nth degree about canceling everybody for everything.
Like, this is what I'm outraged about this month, and let's get this person for saying this horrible thing.
No, absolutely.
And not that actions have consequences, absolutely. And if you say something horrible, you should be willing to face the consequences of that and make amends if you can. But I do find it scary how quickly that internet outrage machine can work. I think about there was that dentist, I think he was up in Minnesota, who hunted the lion, who killed this lion on safari.
Right.
And people went after the dentist's office, and the dentist's office had to shut down. So it wasn't just the dentist. It was all those people who worked for him at that office.
Yeah.
Who suffered the consequences. And there was that woman who was like flying to Africa and made this horrible, ill-advised joke on Twitter, like, oh, I hope I don't get AIDS. Just kidding. I'm white. And then literally by the time her flight landed, she had lost her job.
Yeah, that was like the beginning of the end, or the beginning.
I'm not defending that joke at all, but it's like, well, do you deserve to lose your job for making a horrible joke? I don't know.
I think I'm with you where I don't condone when people say things that are just out of line or just straight up wrong. Like, I think there should be some consequences, but at the same time, I find that some people kind of get like a bit more pleasure out of canceling people than they should. Like, they get like this feeling of superiority of like, saying, oh, you said this. Well, I'm going to make it my life mission to make sure you're broke and homeless and your family doesn't talk to you, by the end of the week. Like, they get like, It's like a power trip. It's like a drug.
They get so vengeful about it, and it's scary. And it's scary how quickly it can happen. I mean, literally in the time it took this woman to fly from wherever to wherever she was going in Africa. So in the space of like a few hours, her life as she knew it was over.
Yeah, and it's just
I find that as scary and in a way as offensive as her making that horrible joke.
Right, and like I mean, it's like we said, but we're not like you know. Not siding with like you know right wingers or whoever, but no. At the same time, like we do understand there's like there has to be some type of you know understanding or like you don't want to go full cancel this person immediately after them saying like one thing, and I think and also a lot of people need to sort of maybe do a little introspection and saying all right, well am I canceling this person because this person really did say something offensive and they need to be held accountable, or am I getting some type of sick you know, perverse joy out of making sure this person's life is
like being an internet crusader or a slacktivist or whatever you want to call it. I mean, it's a little scary.
Yeah. Wow. Shit got real. Wow.
I don't know what the solution is. I'm just going to raise that and then move on.
I'm just, we don't know. I'm just a man in a talking in a microphone who doesn't know how to pronounce Levy. Or Levy.
Yeah, exactly. Same. So next we had Keenan and Chris Redd as twins, The New Trend, who you've probably, these are real people you've probably seen online. They're like these two brothers that play like these well-known songs that they've never heard before, and they react to them for the first time. They, like probably the most famous one was they were reacting to Phil Collins' In the Air Tonight. And, you know, we're hearing them like, all right, yeah, this is cool. Oh, listen to that drum break. All right.
And they've gone viral through that. So they've been doing the same thing with other songs that older people, you know, absolutely know. And because I guess they're younger millennial
folks. I think they're still teens or maybe early 20s. I've seen a few of their videos.
Oh, okay. And so it's like, I think there's one of them listening to Dolly Parton's Jolene for the first time where they're like, oh, all right. And, you know, I guess that was enough for them to be like, hey, let's make this into a sketch. So they have Keenan and Chris come out as them and them listening to all these new songs, you know, for the first time, quote unquote. And like, they play the theme
song.
They play the theme song to Friends. And they're like, oh, I've never heard this song before. This slaps. And of course, Che is like, how have you never heard this song? It's like, this is the theme song to one of the biggest shows of the 90s. It was on NBC. And I think at one point, Chris is like, NBC, what's that? Is that like an STD or something?
Yeah, yeah. And then they played another song that they said had 8 billion views on YouTube. And I felt horrible because I was like, I don't think I have heard this song.
Oh, The Baby Shark?
Yeah, I have not heard that before.
I
don't know how I've missed that if it's gotten 8 million views, but I've somehow avoided that song because I was like, I'm pretty sure I have never heard this. So.
It's like a children's novelty song, I think. Okay. I have heard it, and it is pretty – it's super catchy, and it's like – It's like it's a kid's song that like just gets in your head. It's like, you know, the Barney theme song, like I love you, you love me type of thing.
Okay. Well, and maybe I just never heard it because I don't have kids. I don't know. But I was like, I feel so out of touch now.
Yeah, and of course Che is like, how have you never heard this song? It was everywhere. And it's like, yeah, I don't know. I've never heard this song. And then of course it goes to playing like the commercial for the Meow Mix jingle.
Yeah, the jingle for that. And they're like, no, I never heard this. And then they do the ABC song. And they're like, no, what? Oh, I never heard this.
And then they court the end with playing the theme song to Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, yeah. And they were like, too much saxophone.
Yeah, I can see that. I thought this was pretty fun. I thought this was okay. Like, because part of me does think a little, I guess the cynical part of me does think, like, have these kids really never heard this song before? Or is this like them pretending like they haven't just to play it up and, you know, for views?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you never really know if something like that is a put on or if it's a genuine thing. I thought this was cute, but I don't think it was quite as entertaining as watching the real twins react to songs. So,
yeah, I could see that. Yeah, I thought it was cute enough, but it wasn't like it didn't bowl me over.
Yeah. So, overall, I thought it was just kind of an weekend update.
Yeah, I would say so. Like, I mean, I always like Heidi and Mikey. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, but the cancel culture twin, the cancel culture couple that he wore, I thought it was interesting, but I think it needed like a little, like a twist or something to differentiate it from a little bit. I think I also listened to another podcast where I think somebody mentioned that his character, Mikey Day, was, he's basically kind of like Jebediah Atkinson a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, that next, get out of here. You're gone. You're canceled. There were vibes of that. And yeah, I thought it's like, oh, that's a fair point. And yeah, and like we said, like the twins with Chris and Keenan, I thought it was okay, but didn't really go anywhere. There's no change or twist. They're just kind of hitting the same beats. And so I was like, all right.
Yeah,
it's amusing enough.
All right, next we got Hot Damn, which this was a sketch where we're at a bar on Super Bowl Sunday and the television is broken. And while they're waiting for the new television to be delivered, Dan and Cecily are playing these two bartenders who are like, hey, well, let's pass the time by singing football songs. And everyone's like, I don't think football songs are a thing. And they're like, yeah, no, sure. We're going to sing the song Hot Damn. And of course, it's a song that no one has ever heard before.
Yeah. So basically this is, I mean, we've seen this premise before in a bunch of other episodes where two people know this song that they want everybody else to sing. And it's like a made up song that no one else knows. And of course the two people are like, oh no, you know this song. And then they start singing the song. Yeah. I mean, you know,
and then the twist at the end is like, somebody's like, suddenly, oh, I do know this song. And then they join in and it's perfectly choreographed and all that.
Right. So of course the two people in this sketch are Dan Levy or Levy and Cecily Strong or Strong.
Or Strong.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Dude, you read my mind. And of course, because of Cecily, it's a singing sketch. Because, you know, Cecily's got a song in her heart. She loves to sing.
She's a theater kid. She's just a theater kid at heart.
Right. So, of course, then they start singing, Hot Damn, put it through the football hole. Like, there's like a lot of cool lines here and there.
Just kind of showing their ignorance of sports. And okay. And I like that when they both emerge from the bars, they're wearing like white shirts and black vests, and then they're both wearing dance shorts.
Right. I thought that was
they're in matching outfits, which is kind of funny, except like Cecily was wearing tights or some sort of hose.
Right. I thought there was actually also this one thing that's like a really like subtle thing that Alex Moffitt did that I didn't catch the first time, but I caught it.
Oh, yes. I noted this moment too. Yeah, go ahead.
All right, dude, we're thinking the same thing, that we are in sync. This is fantastic. All right, so when Cecily and Dan say, hey, you guys know this song, right? And then I think it's Beck and Alex saying, no, we don't know what you're talking about. We don't know the song. Then Cecily says, well, fine. Let's not sing a song. I guess we're all just look at our phones and look at porn.
And, right. And Alex Moffat, he like immediately starts going to his pocket for his phone. And just like his character, he doesn't say anything. It was just like he was like, oh, hey, I can look at porn on my phone. All right. Hot damn.
And then I think Beck says, no, we won't do that. And then he's like, oh, okay. And it was a really subtle thing. Like, cause he, like you said, he has no lines. It's all like his facial expression and him going for his phone. And then him being like bummed out that he can't look at his phone.
If you were looking away from the screen at the wrong second, you would totally miss it. But it was very, very funny.
Yeah. I was like, hot damn, Alex Moffat. Hot damn.
Yeah. Yeah. And let's see the number gets, the hot damn number gets kind of more extensive. And at one point it looked like they were going to start up the number again and the music didn't come in at quite the right time.
Yeah.
Did you notice that?
Yeah. There were a few, cues mishaps I've noticed.
Cecily had to like vamp for a little bit. There was one lyric that's so absurd that it struck out at me. She was like, if I don't score a touchdown, I swear I'll eat my bra.
Yeah. What? I was like, all right.
Yeah.
I think I'm they said they want to get a touchback. Like, if you get a touchback, we'll touch back.
Yeah. And eventually, like, Beck, Ego, and Alex's character all join in with Keenan as the lone holdout, being like, hey, I don't know what this is. They pull out top hats and canes. And then, of course, at the very end, Keenan joins in. And then at the end of the sketch, Beck discovers that the TV was unplugged the entire time. And Cecily pulls a knife on him and says, if you tell anyone, we'll kill you.
Yes, then she brandishes a knife. And
yeah.
you know, like New York.
And another funny thing is you can actually see Cecily like reach off screen and like get handed the knife by one of the prop people. So she doesn't like pull it out of nowhere, which is I'm sure what it was supposed to look like, but you can actually see her like grab the knife and just kind of hold it discreetly at her side.
Yeah, whatever.
I'm not complaining about it. I thought it was cute. I mean,
yeah, no, it's
fantastic. You know, live TV show stuff like that's gonna happen.
Yeah, you know, it's funny how like Beck just pulled a trumpet out of nowhere for that one solo, and then they all had hats and top hats. I don't know. I think if you're a theater kid, you'll appreciate this sketch. I dug it, even though it is something we have seen before.
I mean, I didn't like it as much as previous sketches they've done where they're pulling a song out of nowhere. Maybe just because we kind of know the formula of these sketches by this point, but it was cute. It was entertaining. And it was probably the most Cecily had to do in the show. So it was fun in that regard.
Right. Yeah. It is like those other sketches where, you know, these two people sing a song that the other people don't know, but then I think they elevated it with like the top hats and the canes and the tap dancing behind the bar. So I guess it kind of reminded me like those John Mulaney musicals a little bit in that respect, where they kind of up it. So it's like, I guess, a combination of two things we've seen before.
But yeah, I just kind of enjoy it in the sense that like Cecily's one of those people who she's been on the show for so long now that she can just more or less do any sort of esoteric thing she wants to on the show, and it will probably get on. So I kind of enjoy that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So I don't, yeah, thumbs up for me. I'd say it was a cute little sketch. Mm-hmm.
Thumbs up for me too.
Right.
Next, Wedding Friends with Mikey Day and Ego Nwadum as a couple getting married, and Kate and Dan Levy coming up during the objections.
Yeah, and basically, so they're not quite objecting. They're kind of being like passive aggressive about it.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, where they're saying like, "Hey, just want to make sure you're okay. You just want to let you know you look gorgeous, Queen. This is your
moment. You're such a rock star. We love you." And like, random question: does your mom like him?
Yes, exactly.
And Mikey eventually catches on to what they're doing, and he's like, "I'm sorry. Do I suck somehow?"
Yeah, so it's like this big kind of passive aggressive discussion that their friends are having with her as she's getting married. So they're not objecting, but they're not objecting.
Yeah, and at one point they are texting each other during the ceremony, and they've not even turned off the sound on their phones. So you're hearing the blooping of messages coming through as they're giving their vows.
The blooping and the clicking and the texting and the thing and the flam and the flimmy.
And finally, it gets to the point where Mark, Mikey Day's character, just goes off on them, and he's so aggressive about it that they decide that Mark is hot now, so he's now acceptable.
Yeah, this sketch kind of ended really quickly. I don't know if it got cut for time or if that was the actual ending.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it was an ending. I thought it was all right. I thought the sketch was a little damaged because, like, okay, you're seeing Kate and Dan as the friends, and they're standing up for most of the time, but the extras in the scene playing the congregation, they're just kind of all dead-eyed and staring straight into the camera and not reacting to anything that's happening.
Mm.
And I think it would have been enhanced if they were at least like looking at the people who are speaking or reacting a little bit, but no, they were just like zombies.
Interesting. I didn't think to look at that. I didn't think to critique the
extras. I don't know. It jumped out to me when I was watching it, but
wow. Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I didn't even think about that.
Okay.
Yeah, well, look at you making me think.
I'm sorry. I hate it when somebody does that to me.
I didn't hop on this podcast, Mike, to think, John. I think you did.
Yeah. I understand. I understand. I won't make you think again.
Please, the smoke comes out of my ears. I don't need that today. Yeah. But this is like another sketch where it mostly hinges on the performances, just because there's not a ton there as far as, like, you know, the material goes. So it's just like, how charming do you find Kate and Dan Levy or Levy or Levi?
Third pronunciation. It's combo breaker.
I know. I'm just putting another one in the mix. The abrupt ending for me was kind of weird, I thought. It kind of reminded me of last week when they had the the sketch, the Subway sketch, where they're talking about Subway sandwiches, and it was like Krasinski and Beck as the two guys. That sketch ended pretty abruptly as well. It just like came to like a really quick resolution, and it was just done. This one was kind of like that, where they were like, "Oh, Mark is screaming at us now. He's hot. He's rail me, daddy," as which is a line Dan said, not me. But sure. But yeah, it just kind of ended kind of quickly, and it was just like, I don't know. It needed more, I thought. I thought this needed more. I thought, mm-hmm. I mean, you can see like Dan and Kate were up for it. They were, you know, charming enough, and they did what they could. But the sketch as a whole, I think, was kind of lacking.
It worked well enough for me.
Yeah, it was just good enough to get there.
Okay. And really, isn't that what we're all going for? Just good enough to get there.
That's what we strive for this podcast every day when we can record.
That's right. And some weeks we even achieve it. lastly, we have the It Gets Better project. This was another pre-tape with we just passed the 10th anniversary of the It Gets Better, which was like reaching out to young LGBT Q people and just assuring them that even though life is very tough now, it does get better and you find more acceptance as your life goes on.
Yeah, and this sketch I thought was pretty interesting just because it has, you know, Dan Levy or Levy or Levi in it. Mm-hmm. And it has the three other openly gay cast members in this sketch, Bowen, Kate, and Punky.
I don't think I realized that Punky was officially out, but watching the sketch, I was like, oh, okay, I guess she's out. All right.
No.
Cool.
Out and proud.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was basically like them, they were holding up old pictures of them, like actual old pictures of them.
Oh, yes.
They were kids.
And Bowen's character says, "Yeah, I like after I got out of high school, I stopped getting bullied by straight people. I immediately started getting tormented by gay people for my taste in music, I think." You know, he's still not entirely clear why other gay people have been after him.
I don't know about this sketch. I thought was okay, but I don't know if I totally got it. It seemed like the premise of it was, yeah, things get better as you get older, but, like, you know, life is still life. So life gets better, yeah. But it's still life. It's still, like, a little bit worse.
I thought it got a little muddled. Like Kate's character, she's in a loving marriage, and she's got two daughters, but her daughters have an iguana that apparently drives her nuts and has caused all sorts of problems. Like, her urine has – the iguana's urine, not Kate McKinnon's urine – has ruined her floors.
Yeah, and of course, and then Dan Levy talks about how, you know, he doesn't get shoved in a locker anymore, but what does feel like getting shoved in a locker is income tax. I was like,
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought, like, the message, like, I didn't know exactly what the sketch was trying to say, really.
I guess, like, life, you know, even if you're not dealing with prejudice, life sucks in other ways.
Yeah, I think that's maybe it, but I don't know if that's strong enough for a sketch.
Yeah, I definitely think that Bowen's character was the funniest or the sharpest take, you know, where it was like, yeah, I'm not getting bullied by straight people. I'm getting bullied by gay people for stupid minor reasons. I kind of wish the whole sketch had things like that.
Yeah, I think that's the, like, this part, it was more heartfelt, I guess, because, you know, it was all, mm-hmm. all the openly gay cast members and Dan Levy or Levy or Levi, but it was, so it was more heartfelt. But I think this sketch kind of lacked focus a little bit as to like what exactly
yeah,
they're trying to say.
It was a little muddled, I thought.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, I like that one line Punky had at the end where it said, "Don't, you know, when you're with your partner, don't wear basketball shorts because people think you're the one that fights." I thought that was a good line. But yeah, but overall, like, I didn't know exactly what this sketch was trying to say.
Yeah, that was kind of, I didn't quite find the on-ramp to this one.
Right. So I thought, yeah, this sketch was like, this needed a rewrite, or it just needed more focus or something.
Yeah. There was also a cut for time sketch called Men's Cosmetics. Just watched this a little before we started recording. Fake commercial. They're talking just about, they're selling like men's makeup in like very macho terms.
Yeah.
And Dan Levy, Levi, Levinson, maybe. I don't know. I don't know anymore. He's like, yeah, this is makeup. You're selling makeup for men.
Yeah, but like, it's like, no, dude, this is like, dude, bro, you know, concealer. And it's like, they show Alex Moffat opening up a base, like makeup, but it's in like a beer can.
Yeah, like concealer or, yeah.
Right. And he's like applying like blush, but it's from, the blush is from a gun shaped brush. Mm-hmm. Like,
yes. Yeah.
But yeah,
I really like this. It was quick. It's only like a minute 46. It's on YouTube. I really liked it. I thought it was funnier than most of what they had on the show this week.
Yeah, I would say so. I really dug it. I mean, it's interesting to see like Dan Levy or Levi or Levowitz like sort of before being himself, like kind of reacting to this, like, you know, normal people would, saying, yeah, you don't have to put it like this. You know, it's guys can look nice too. Mm-hmm. And it kind of also reminded me of, I don't know, have you ever seen stuff like this where you do see like, you know, regular products, but it's like kind of geared towards men? I swear that I saw this one day when I was in the supermarket. I was looking around and like in the aisle, I saw in the yogurt aisle, there was like this one yogurt, but it was like yogurt for men. And it was in like a black and gray container. And I think it had abs on it, or it was painted to look like steel or something. And it was like
wow,
dude yogurt, like yogurt for men. And I was like,
I had no idea that yogurt was considered a feminine thing.
I forget the company that makes it, but I know it, guys, if you're listening, you know, tweet at us the picture. I know it's out there. It's like yogurt for bros, like brogurt. And I looked at that and I was like, how? Oh, brother. Like, you know, how much do you need to have your yogurt look manly because you're afraid of how it'll look for you to eat, you know, you put like a creamy white yogurt in your mouth. You're like, you're that, like, dude, come on, man.
I enjoy a nice yogurt. I'm just going to say it.
Yogurt's delightful.
I picked up some yogurt at the store last night.
Yes, a lovely Yoplait, some fruit on the bottom. It's tasty.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, I like the Chobani flip yogurts where you flip in the little crumbles and you got a little crunch with the yogurt. It's great.
Oh, that's fun. That's a fun time. Yeah. Like the little the Greek yogurt, the Okinos, you mix it in with like little, the fruit compote, the peaches and the strawberries and the blueberry. I mean, my, it is.
I may have myself a yogurt as soon as we're done recording.
Ooh, a nice parfait. Oh, ooh la la.
Ooh, you get a little fruit mixed in with the strawberries and the blueberries with some vanilla yogurt and mwah!
Ooh, it's a cheat day.
Yeah.
Tasty. Where were they going with this?
I don't know. We just like yogurt, you guys.
Levy.
Levy.
All right. Yeah.
Tastes great. Less filling.
Yeah. So that's the episode, guys. That's the Dan Levy, Levi, Levels.
Yes.
Phoebe Waller-Bridgers episode.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yes. We're good with names, you guys.
The best. Interesting note. No Pete Davidson in this episode. No Chloe Fineman and no Lauren Holt, which I was like, oh.
Pete does pop up in the deleted men's cosmetics sketch, though.
You're right. He does. Yeah. He has no lines, really, but he is there.
He is there. He is appearing. He is like working out and doing stuff.
Yes. He's throwing the football through the football hole.
Yeah.
As it were. So, yes, overall thoughts on this episode?
You know, it was all right. It didn't have as much that I'd say blew me away than the John Krasinski episode did last week. So a mixed bag for me, like a lot of episodes of SNL. What about you?
Yeah, I'll agree. I'll go with that. It's, it was a mix. I liked the energy of this episode a little bit more. I think it was more upbeat. Uh-huh. I think it was more Dan Levy. It was a little bit more Levy. Was a little bit more charming. And this had a bigger, I guess, I don't want to say energy again, but it had more, I guess, like a better vibe about it. And of course, I think the musical guest, Phoebe, helped with that too. He, like, you know, of course, both her musical performances I thought were great. I actually liked them better than Machine Gun Kelly. And like her, you know, the second performance, her smashing the guitar, screaming like a banshee, and all of that, like, I think that helped up the energy and up the the excitement of the show. So I think
because I think we've had 2 weeks of both of really strong musical guests. So
yeah, no, absolutely.
You know, we're on a good trend with musical guests, definitely.
We're good. We're
doing next week, the show is featuring Regina King and Nathaniel Rateliff. So I'm familiar with Regina King, of course. Nathaniel Rateliff, I don't really know. Do you know Nathaniel Rateliff?
Not
or Rotliff?
I believe it's pronounced Levy.
Oh, okay.
I don't know much about him. I know he's like kind of a folksy, bluesy, kind of a southern rock type of dude. So it'll be on that type of tip, but yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to learning finding out about a new musician who's been out for a while, who I've totally flew under my radar until SNL told me to listen to him.
There you go. There you go. So that was it. That's what we thought of the Dan Levy, Levy, Levi, Phoebe Waller, Bridgerton episode.
Right. So so I know we got some tweets on it too. So like,
oh yes, we did.
What did you, the listener, think?
Let's get into the tweets. We didn't get it. We did last week. We had some tweet messages and we were like so fried from all the technical difficulties that we had, we didn't even read them on this episode that you probably will never hear.
Dude, after that episode I just like wanted to go home and cry in the shower and drink a beer.
Yeah.
And eat.
Yeah. And I think that is more or less what I did too. But here's what folks had to say about this episode. Vax Novier or Novier said real Will Ferrell Trident vibes from Phoebe smashing a guitar. I'm not quite sure what that means. Is he talking about the Anchorman fight?
I think so, because it maybe escalated quickly.
Yeah. Okay.
Which it did. It's like.
Yeah,
because again, we haven't seen a good guitar smash in forever, or at least I haven't.
It was Steve Carell who had the trident, though.
Right.
I would have to point out as an Anchorman fan.
Right, go back and listen to our episode, guys.
Yeah. Let's see what other questions comes. Ruby the Rube says this show was the exact same stuff they've been doing for the past 5 years. Straight Man Mikey, Cecily sings a song no one knows. Keenan reacts. Melissa gets 3 seconds of screen time. Most viewers are probably thinking, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, but it was real boring, in my opinion. Mm. On a more positive note, Phoebe Bridgers dressed like a David S. Pumpkins dancer and smashed a guitar, and that's all that matters.
Any questions?
let's see. Scott Hume, my old college roommate, says, I thought it was one of the better episodes of the season. The COVID, we're doing everything right sketch really hit home. It's how I feel every time I leave the house. Hot Damn also had me cackling. Hashtag football hole.
Yeah, Hot Damn, it's a catchy little number if you go back and listen to it. And I kind of do agree with what Ruby said. This one, because with the last episode, it seems like they were taking maybe a little bit more risks with their sketches, whereas this one is a little bit more kind of them going back to the tried and true stuff. Because, like, I mean, we've said before that there were elements of the sketches from this week's where we were like, oh, I've seen that before. That's kind of like this. So it seemed like this was a little bit more them kind of going back to their old bag of tricks. But because I thought like Dan was like being like super charming and charismatic, he was able to, carry it and make it a little bit better. Or, you know, or just push it over the line for me.
Okay. Let's see. We got a comment from our friend Manette Marati says, what are your thoughts on SNL diverging from the general POTUS cold opens to a more topic of the week cold open 2 times now?
I'm fine with it. I'm super happy with it, just because, I mean, there's no hard and fast rule that the cold open has to be a political. I think we've had...
Yeah, it just kind of seemed that way because there was so much stuff going on in the world of politics for the last few years, because things were just so chaotic, and hopefully we're like stabilizing a little bit more as a country.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Like I'm totally fine with them kind of experimenting with the cold open a little bit, like, making it shorter, longer, going into different topics of just, really exploring the space.
Explore the space. Absolutely. I mean, we are pro exploring the space.
Right.
I would like to see a little more of Alex Moffat's Joe Biden. I don't know if anyone has figured out a good, accurate comedic take on Biden yet.
Yeah,
I see some attempts. Like during Weekend Update, they had a joke about Joe Biden like massaging things without permission.
Oh right, yeah, they did do that.
I mean, that seems like kind of an old reference at this point.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's still something he does.
I think that's the thing. It's just he's this kind of. Yeah, I haven't seen too many people. Like, yeah, think about now. Yeah, not a lot of people have been able to sort of get a bead on how to play him. Like, even like if you look at the late night talk show hosts like Colbert and Fallon and whatnot, like they don't really have figured out the best way to sort of to characterize him, as it were, because we can't.
Right. And I don't feel like there's maybe a whole lot to work with yet, because let's face it, most of what Biden has done so far has been like trying to undo a lot of stuff that Trump did. And yeah, what do you do with that as a comedic thing?
Right. No, absolutely. And it just like, I mean, you could be like, I think like Colbert has a thing where he's like, hey, Jack, what's going on there? Daddy-o. And him wearing the aviators. That's like the best take, I guess. Yeah. But like, I guess because there's no one has really got a bead on it. So I don't know if we're going to like how that's going to play out in future episodes. I mean, hopefully Alex will find the thing that kind of he's able to latch onto and, you know, he's able to sort of play Biden in a way that everybody will be like, oh, yeah, that's what that'll be like the defining Biden, like everybody else will maybe go along with that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just excited we have a cast member playing the president again. I mean, because it feels like forever since we've had that.
It's been a minute. It's been like as long as I've seen a guitar smash on stage. Like is the last time I've seen a cast member play. Feel like.
And our friends at the Decomposition podcast, they say, I don't know that I've ever related to SNL as hard as that Zillow sketch. And, well, that makes sense. You're homeowners.
Yeah. The Zillow sketch hit a lot of people like in the heart, like, oh, I think a lot of people are starting to realize that a lot of other people do that same thing that they do.
Yeah. Yeah. They tapped into something there.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see, lastly, Trumbull Comic, from a few hours ago says,
oh, who's that?
Question, should I finish watching the show before we record the podcast today? Probably, right? Yes, John, I think you should. I think that would be, just mildly professional for you to finish watching the thing that you're going to spend an hour and a half talking about on a podcast.
Yeah, Trumbull Comic, dude, who does that? Who doesn't watch the last 15 minutes of a TV show before they go on a podcast and talk about it?
We were talking before we started recording. There has been at least one episode of this podcast where, and as I recall, it was one of the SNL movies we were covering, where before we started recording, Darren says, I didn't catch the last 15 minutes of this movie for whatever reason. So I was like, oh, okay, well, I guess I'll take point on summarizing the end of the movie then.
Right.
And neither one of us could remember what episode that was. Right. So
listeners, if you can figure out which movie I didn't see the last 15 minutes of, you'll get a big surprise.
That's right. We'll figure out some cool prize because at this point we don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, go into the archives and give it a listen.
Please do. Let us know where I fumbled.
Yeah. And honestly, there might even be more than one episode where that's happened.
I wouldn't doubt it.
But hopefully we fake it convincingly.
Yes, we fake it till we make it.
That's all you can do, really.
Indeed. We throw the football in the football hole.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, was that anything else? Did I miss any cool tweets?
No, I think that's it, man. I think we got it. Guys, as always, you can follow us on Twitter at SNL Nerd Show.
Mm-hmm.
And you can follow me on the Twitters and the Instagrams at Darren Credible. That's D-A-R-I-N Credible.
And you can follow me on the Twitter and the Instagrams at Trumbull Comic. That's T-R-U-M-B-U-L-L and the word comic. Also, you know, please support the other shows on the Non-Productive Podcast Network and contribute to our Patreon, please, because that helps us keep the lights on and give you all this cool free content.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you know, give us the monies, because we could use the monies, and we like the monies, and monies is money.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Oh, and I should just plug a couple things. I've guest starred on another couple podcasts recently.
Ooh.
I'm on the latest episode of Cheers Cast that's hosted by my friend Ryan Daly, where he goes through every single episode of Cheers. I'm doing the episode Cheerio Cheers along with him. So check that out wherever you listen to podcasts. That's on the Fire and Water Podcast Network, Cheers Cast. And I think by the time this airs, the latest episode of The Marvelous will have dropped, and I guest star on that with my friend Peter Melnick, and we're talking about the latest episode of WandaVision, which at the time we're recording this is the fifth episode. So if you've seen the fifth episode of WandaVision and you want to hear what I and Peter thought of it, check that out. That's The Marvelous Podcast.
All right. I'm going to check that out right after.
It's the word Marvel, I-S-T-S. So,
oh, I did not know that. Marvel its.
Yeah. Marvel ists, like scientists.
Oh, look. All right, now I got it. That's clever.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not saying marvelous.
Okay.
So we've had a lot of pronunciation problems on this podcast, and I just want to make sure we are absolutely clear.
Right.
It is Marvel ists.
It's pronounced Levi. I
think. Yes.
That podcast.
Indubitably.
Indubitably. Whoa. All right. And, I guess that's the episode, guys. That's all we got.
Mm-hmm. I think that's it for this week. So we will see you next week. Hopefully we will have no more recording snafus. So we'll see you next week for Regina King and Nathaniel Rateliff. But until then, nerds out!
This has been a Non-Productive Media presentation. Executive producer, Franca Blaui. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.